The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Security footage from store after store. Thieves breaking in, stealing hundreds, thousands of dollars.
We've been in business 17 years and we have two locations. And up until this last year, we'd had zero break-ins.
Not only are the break-ins ramping up, but so is the nature of the crime.
It's really like a pressure cooker, you know, when you have these repeat offenses against you. It's extremely stressful trying to keep all the employees safe and keep business running smoothly.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, you've seen the footage, right? Unbelievable stuff. Perhaps you've even experienced theft or robbery. Maybe you run a small store or shop. I've seen so much reporting on this in recent days of shop owners who are closing their shops now. There was one shop owner I saw in New York. She sold high-end like athletic wear or something. She had to shut her business down because people would come in, literally just walk in, take stuff off the racks, and walk out the door. Just walk out the door. When you see people going into Walgreens or pharmacies and they're getting toilet paper because they need, you know, they don't want to pay for it, or they're taking whatever they want off the shelves, you know, kind of hygienic type of materials. Or in the stores, I see one man, there was a report, went in and stole, you know, you know how much meat is today per pound? He's taking fillets, going right in and walking right out. There are some places that, of course, they either get a slap on the wrist, or they're told, don't stop anybody, they're coming. I think Apple just said that too, told people, hey, you know, if somebody comes in, don't stop them, right? Things can be replaced. You know, somebody comes up and puts a gun to my head, says, give me your wallet. You can have my wallet. Here's the keys of the car too. See ya, right? It's like, those things can be replaced. But I saw a story today, and the reason I want to talk about this, there's some moral lessons here. I want to talk about theft. We seem to downplay it like it's not a big deal, but there is a moral component to this. But the world's largest retail store, do you know who that is? Come on, I know you do, right? Walmart, right? They are warning they could end up closing stores around the country. Walmart? I couldn't believe that was a true story. Walmart's going to close stores around the country because of the losses that they're encountering? Huge losses. Huge losses caused by theft. People tend to sit up and take notice when somebody like Walmart, the CEO of Walmart, it's a guy named Doug McMillon. He was on CNBC yesterday, and he said that, look, if we can't bring the losses down because of theft, a couple things are going to happen here. One, we're going to have to raise prices, and or, he says, we need to close our stores. So you're either going to pay more, or prices are going to go up and stores are going to close as well. McMillon, the CEO there, he said, he told the outlet, look, we're seeing rates of loss higher than we've ever seen before. Ever seen before. And to put that in perspective, I saw a report, Reuters reported back in 2015 that Walmart lost about 1% of its revenue. Now, this is a huge company, right? 1% of Walmart's revenue, just to give you a perspective, $3 billion. I said to one of my producers this morning, if I'm losing $3 billion a year, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to hire armed guards out front of every door, right? Or have them in the store. I saw a news report the other day of a shop owner in Philadelphia. He had one of those Quick Marts or whatever it is. He had gas pumps out front and people were in there. Hired guys in basically bulletproof vests, badges, and AR-15s to stand out there. Now, you know, thieves are not going to go to a difficult target. They're going to find an easy target, right? So, you know, I bet his theft is going to go way down. But, you know, you got Walmart saying, hey, we're going to close stores. We're going to raise prices. One other story here, too. Deacon Ernie Martinez is going to be joining me. Walmart's not alone. You think that they're being targeted? I don't think so. Target reports that they've lost $400 million this year so far. And they expect that to grow to about $600 million by the end of the year. I just don't understand theft. If somebody gives me a dime too much when they give me my change back and I'm in my car in the parking lot, I'll walk back in and give them that dime. You know, it just goes against my nature. So Target's chief financial officer, their CFO, he blames what he calls organized retail crime. It's not just individuals. You know, he's talking about organized crime robbing certain places. But he also says, look, we're talking ordinary hoodlums organizing themselves And they're going to go and they're going to take what they want. They're not going to worry about the consequences. We saw this before, a bunch of kids in sweatshirts coming in, storming the store like a bunch of rats, you know, taking everything they want and running back out. Nobody can stop them. It's just an overwhelming number. They didn't worry about the consequences. Why? Because state laws have been rewritten to actually allow something like that to happen. So, gosh, there's so much. If it's not the big guys facing this, there was a restaurant in Seattle that reported on Instagram that they suffered their 18th break-in in just 2.5 years. A coffee shop owner across the street from the restaurant said her store gets broken into about twice a month. I'd shut my door. And that's what people are doing, right? There was another restaurant owner with stores in California, Arizona, said he's been robbed 4 times in 4 months. We're going to put these places out of business unless we do something about it. I'm joined today by Deacon Ernie Martinez. He's a deacon at Notre Dame Parish in Denver, but he also is a narcotic police officer and an at-large representative of the National Narcotic Officers Association Coalition. So his, you know, his world of his universe, if you will, his world is law enforcement. And I've invited him to join us. I know he's seen fentanyl pouring across the border, and we see the devastation that has come as a result of that. And we've seen lawlessness rise in our country. Deacon, it's good to have you with me again. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm well. I'm a little disturbed by some of these stories to hear that Walmart and Target, I mean, Walmart may close stores. That speaks volumes. But when you lose $1 billion, you think, well, what can I do? Are you surprised at what we're seeing? I'd like your take. You know, you're in law enforcement. There's so many angles to take on this. First of all, why has this gotten so out of hand? I mean, we're seeing record theft.
Yeah, I think that's a loaded question, but we've been seeing this happen over the last several years, at least the last 5 to 6 years in our city. And, you know, all crime is local. It truly is. It's like, you know, it was, you know, said under former Speaker of the House Tip O'Neill that all politics is local. Mm-hmm. Crime starts at the local level and obviously just merges out, you know, as we're seeing with Walmart making their announcement and the Starbucks closes stores, you know, over the last several months because of this same type of issue. I think you see the breakdown of society, the allowance of policymakers in state legislatures and in city councils across the United States have truly relaxed accountability in the law, accountability to arrest of certain levels of crime, and theft is one of them. Theft is one of those lower level crimes that always been a lower level, but at the same time, there were arrests made and arrests holding people accountable, whether that's through the judicial process or through a probation process where people are held accountable based on the factors in their record and the factors in their lives and what's going to be best to turn this, you know, this person around in the accountability piece. And we've seen that being basically thrown under the bus over the last at least decade. You know, so we've seen that work hand in hand with legalization of marijuana here, where we had tons of people coming to the city where they would say that, you know, we come to the city because it's legalized, number one. Number two is because we're going to get involved in, you know, in working in the industry, the marijuana industry. And then they start finding out that, hey, it's expensive to live in Denver. We can't afford it. Nothing's working out. So we are going to go to the Targets, going to go to the Walgreens, the CVS stores and start stealing what we need to steal. And believe it or not, that's why you're starting to see CVSs across the United States, Walgreens, locking up things like underarm antiperspirant and toothpaste and, you know, all those different sundry items that typically, you know, would never even fathom 20 years ago of locking up. Now they're being all locked up in addition to a lot of other things. So it's a breakdown of society. It's the lax politicians that are allowing these policies to be basically circumvented because of the over-exuberance of embracing a permissive society.
So yeah, there's a lot to explore. The old broken window policy, you know, should every one of these crimes have a consequence? I think that would deter some of this. But I also think, you know, on a cultural level, we're dealing with this sense of entitlement. People today feel they have this sense of entitlement. And it, with a, from the moral perspective, they don't, I think in some of their minds, they don't think it's wrong. He's the man. He can afford it. He's Walmart. You know, right. They're going to write this loss off. It's not a big deal. I need it more than they do. I'm entitled to these things, so I'm going to take them. It doesn't process in my computing. I mean, it just that algorithm doesn't work. It makes me short circuit. But that's the logic that some people are using. So, I mean, how do we get to that point where people can justify this? Let's talk about the morality of that as well. So I'd love that, because then it also goes to law enforcement too. They think, we're not going to prosecute somebody. It's a small little petty crime. So, I mean, there's a couple things at play here. It's not one or the other. I think it's a number of things.
Well, St. Paul said the Romans, what he said, that none of us lives as his own master and none of us dies as his own master. But however, people are turning that upside down, and they think that they're in charge. They think that this is about me. It's all, everything's centered, right? You know, you look at the past, and in the past we had magazines like Look, you know, and like People magazine, and we had a magazine called Us. And all of a sudden, we're starting to look at magazines that are titled, you know, me, and everything's turned inward, and it's not outward anymore. And the culture has permeated that through movies, through radio, through sitcoms. It's all about me and my reality, right? And that's the unfortunate thing. So you couple that with, you know, people walking away from faith over the last, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. And you have no faith-based component in your life. You have no biblical point of view and looking at life through those lenses, having a relationship with our Lord Jesus Christ. Of course, it's going to go the other way. Of course, it's going to be divided. Of course, it's going to look inward, because the enemy is at work every single day, you know, in our lives, trying to take us away from God. And that's what we're starting to see in society, you know, and everybody looks at a victimhood type of relationship with themselves and with others. And it's, what about, what does it involve me? Is this, how do I get ahead? How do I get ahead of the man? How do I get ahead of the government? How do I get ahead of this and that? Instead of saying, how do I cooperate with God's grace? And how do I establish a relationship with him that could be everlasting to make me give better to my fellow man and my community? And that's the unfortunate thing. So this whole idea of self is totally inward and totally influenced by the culture and the demonic culture of that.
Yeah. That's well said. My guest is Deacon Ernie Martinez. He's involved in law enforcement as well as a narcotics police officer. And if you want to join us, I only have maybe 10 more minutes or so. I'll open the phones. You can get in. Maybe you've encountered this, experienced this. Maybe you got a loved one who's, you know, running down this pathway. Feel free to dial in. It's 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. It's a pervasive ideology in our culture today. There's a spirit of entitlement. There's a lack of consequence for action. And there's a real rejection of the sin. I mean, this is the seventh commandment. Thou shalt not steal. And people freely do what they want to do. And, you know, there's some other theories behind it. There's another one. I know you're a narcotics officer. You've seen the effects that drugs can have on communities as well as individuals. One shop owner that I was reading about a little bit earlier, the guy who was robbed four times in California and Arizona, he believes that fentanyl that's pouring across the border is fueling this right now. I'd like your take on that. How much of this is actually fueled by the amount of fentanyl that's coming into our country? Because this is another epidemic in our country.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I agree. I've been a narc officer for years and years, and I'm in my 40th year starting in January, which I'm retiring soon.
Wow, but, congratulations.
Thank you. Drugs have always been the fuel for crime, whether that's shoplifting and theft or whether that's crimes of violence. Drugs and addiction have always driven that, always. And the recent drug of choice, because it's been so pushed by the southwest border and by our neighbors in Mexico, is fentanyl. And the unfortunate thing is, you know, we have such an insatiable attitude and thirst for mind-altering substances in the United States. 90% of all illegal drugs are in the world are used in the United States. I mean, think about that. The entire world, right? 90% of all illegal drug use is taken in the United States. So what does that say? That says that we're a culture of trying to trying to just mask ourselves and our passions and our feelings and everything to a mind-altering substance instead of finding the only mind-altering substance, and that's the divinity of Jesus Christ, right? The Father, Son, the Holy Spirit. Unfortunately, we have the Trinity working the opposite way. We have the Trinity of the me, myself, and I, as opposed to the Holy Spirit and God and Jesus Christ. And until we turn that around, we're not going to see it. But we've had organized theft rings for the last 40, 50 years, Drew. I mean, you have smart groups that call booster groups that would go out boosting because they would go and rip clothing sizes. They would take clothing sizes from people that they know they could sell pants to and those types of things. And basically a shopping list of theft. And they would bring them and they would sell them and they would have money to go buy the drugs that they need for their addiction habit. It's been happening since day one, and it's even worse now because of social media. They could organize these groups to smash and grab and to go into these individual businesses that are closing their doors or going into the businesses systemically like the superstores like Walmart and Target and CVS and Walgreens.
Yeah. All right, let's grab a few calls. We've got a few minutes here for you. 888-914-9149 if you want to get in. Claire's listening in Traverse City, Michigan. Claire, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you. I just wanted to share an idea. One of my sons is a teacher, and he's talking about growing in virtue, you know, and sure. just helping kids understand the whole concept of honesty, trustworthiness, and empathy. And how does it feel if someone takes something from you,
right.
you know, so kind of working on establishing a well-formed conscious. And I think we need to get back to this. You know.
Claire, I think you brought up a great point. And as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking, Deacon, you know, we're talking about all the things, fentanyl and, you know, these liberal, laws for people who commit these types of crimes. But really what it breaks down to is ultimately the family. You know, I when I grew up, my mother and father instilled certain values in me. Of course, I had a Catholic education, too, which I think certainly helped. But, you know, it comes down to teaching our children these principles, not justifying them, not excusing them. I hope the kids aren't learning from parents with this type of behavior, but fostering virtue in our children, and especially instilling those commandments like thou shalt not steal, it should just be so fundamental. And yet I think there's a big void there, and I think that's another factor that's contributing to what we're seeing. Your thoughts?
Yep. Absolutely. The domestic church is totally broken in society. We have so many broken families, divorce and those types of things that how do you cultivate virtue when you don't have a family? You know, I feel for the broken families that don't have the father figure at home, that they're in their third or fourth generation of people that have been addicted in their family. Yes, I agree with your caller. We need to cultivate virtue, you know, and starting in the family for those families that are still families that cultivate a virtue and perfection and humility and, you know, mortification to a degree, patience, you know, you name it, charity, especially charity, right? And fill up those oil lamps with charity. But the thing is, until we do it as a family, then eventually into society, it's going to continue, and it's going to continue to get ugly.
That's so true. All right, Mike in Chicago, thanks for your patience. Good afternoon.
Hello. So here's my point was, you know, the stores, especially the big box stores, have been eliminating jobs as far as cashiers and putting these self-checkouts in, making it really easy to steal anything you want. There you go.
All right. Hey, thank you. So Mike's saying, okay, maybe we need to change checkout policy as well. I was sharing with you, Deacon, about a 7-Eleven, that's a store in Philadelphia, whose owner got so fed up, he hired armed guards, stayed outside all day, full body armor, AR-15 strapped across her chest. What's the solution? I know there are some practical steps. Mike's saying, hey, get rid of self-checkout. It is convenient. It is quick. It's easy. Having armed guards, I think that's a big expense, but your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you have a deterrence of a trained armed guard, I think that's part of the solution, but it's not just one thing. It's a combination of things. You have to target harden it, so to speak.
Yeah.
You have a policy with most, you mentioned this earlier, policy of most people having a hands-off policy because they, you know, they're looking at it. We don't want any employees getting hurt. We don't want to get sued. And it's all because of litigious society. So what do you do? You train your employees to be the best witnesses, but at the same time, even with video, it's hard to identify people and it's hard to get prosecution of those people. It just never happens anymore. So it's a pipe dream. But I do believe hardly in a full spectrum approach, and that starts with with target hardening your areas, with even up to the degree of an expensive, you know, hiring armed guards or off-duty police officers. Right. We have off-duty police officers working grocery stores in the city and county of Denver because of that stuff. Right. And yeah, we eliminate a few things, but still it's not going to eliminate everything.
That's for sure. Monica is listening in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I think she discovered Relevant Radio by
Hi,
accident. Hey, Monica.
Am I on the radio?
You are. Hi. Good afternoon.
Okay. I just have to tell you, I love your station. I discovered it by accident, and
great.
I feel so blessed.
Well, tell others about it, okay?
I listen to it 24/7.
Great.
What?
Tell others about it.
Anyhow, the fact that they're legislating in California that you can steal $900 a day
yep.
is only popularizing without any repercussions.
I agree.
Whoever's financing the people who are putting through this legislation and buying off the judges, for this is completely wrong, and I don't know where it goes from there. But I live in New Mexico, and I was walking into a Walgreens, and I thought this was ironic. So the people that steal stuff for you, they're called boosters.
Right. Right.
So there's these two boosters talking to me. They go, "What are you going to buy?" And I'm like, "Well, we'll steal it from you." I'm like, "Well, I'm going to go and buy three 7-day candles." So I definitely go to hell for having somebody go and steal those. I thought it was just ironic. But yeah. It's through the legislation that it is a planned demolition of society, starting off with in the 1970s when they were giving free housing to moms in the New York area, but they would not permit the fathers to come and live with them.
Yeah.
Well, and children need both parents.
Amen to that. Monica, I think you bring up a lot of good points before we go too deep. And first of all, I'm glad you found us. Tell others if you enjoy Relevant, you know, get them tuned into it as well. I think what she said is great here in a couple of things. One, the boosters is a fascinating thing. They're outside. What do you want? We'll go steal it for you. And there's a lot of people who say, I'm not going to be guilty of the crime. So, but yeah, I could use, you know, I need some ibuprofen. I could use some razors. I get whatever it is that they need in the Walmart or the CVS. That person goes in, steals $50 worth of merchandise and slips them a 20, you know? So, we're seeing another layer of this and what happens when there are permissive laws. But Deacon, to her point, she's right. When you know that you can steal up to $900, you can walk in and bring a bag and fill it and nothing's going to happen to you. What's to stop people who are malformed from saying, what the heck? I don't need to buy toothpaste or shampoo or deodorant or aspirin or whatever else they need. They're just going to go in and steal it. And I've seen it in grocery stores as well. Your thought to Monica's comments. And I do think it's part of a much bigger ideology. We're seeing the destruction of family and culture at large.
Yeah, hence the problem. Until the accountability piece comes in, until we get people that are educated in making sure that, you know, this isn't going to get any better. We need to hold people accountable. In addition to, you know, the family being the best and the first of teachers in the faith to their children, to their grandchildren, and it starts working from the inside out and the outside in, we're going to continue to see this. It's truly unfortunate. The reality is there. You know, it's like analogous to traffic laws. If we just forego traffic laws, imagine the chaos on the streets. I mean, we have enough chaos as it is now with existing traffic laws, the accountability to stay in your proper lane, to travel under a certain speed limit or at least close to it. Look at all the trouble we have with legalized traffic laws now. Imagine if those all went away. Well, you know what? It's no different than what's going on right now with theft. Everything is totally being opened up. And we got these highways of theft that are happening. It's not going to stop. The unfortunate thing is until someone does something from a policy level in government and actually hires the officers needed for that jurisdiction, the numbers of officers needed for that jurisdiction, and you have the judicial component that's going to hold people accountable in a court of law, it's not going to get any better. That's the unfortunate bottom line. So what do we do as a community? Right, we gather together as the Church of Christ, amen, as the body of Christ, and start teaching it even more so in our catechesis and everything we do, and start making people aware of this, and start praying more, because we do need to pray more, because it's a spiritual battle. You're every right. day.
Yeah, I could agree with you more. That was so well said, and we need to do our part. Deacon, I want to thank you. I mean, a lot of people want to join the conversation, but I know we're up against the clock here. We'll be praying for you. I'm glad you've served our country for 40 years. I pray for your continued safety there. And I look forward to the next time you and I can talk. Okay, keep us in your prayers as well, okay?
I will. Thank you. God bless.
God bless. You're so grateful for Deacon Ernie Martinez. He's Deacon at Notre Dame Parish in Denver. If you're there, stop in, say hello, and tell him you heard him on Relevant, okay? Also, a narcotics police officer. Let's pray for him and all those men and women who serve in very dangerous occupations, okay? When I return, we will change gears. Another fascinating conversation. You'll love this one.
You know, we receive over 1 million prayer requests every year, thanks in part to the Catholic Order of Foresters Studio Line, helping us stay connected to your intentions. Learn how our sponsor could support your family with life insurance at relevantradio.com/Forester. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
You're listening to The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
When the day is breaking.
Yeah, we're in that that season where we begin to reflect on the reality of the incarnation, on the fact that, the God who created the universe took on human flesh. And we as Catholics, we've always had a very incarnational outlook on the world, which is why we celebrate, you know, the sacraments, right? In a very real, tangible way. We have things like water and oil and bread and wine, and in our marriages, you know, we celebrate with our bodies. Most of the time, we don't really think about our bodies or what they can do, of course. But when you're not feeling well, you think about them, right? When that lower back hurts or that headaches or the arthritis ramps up, day to day, you just go back to your normal self. You know, you breathe, you stretch, you do that different type of thing. But when you start to look at what's required in order for your body to do what it does, think about it. Think how many times your heart beats. Think about how many times your lungs, you know, breathe. Think about what your body's able to do, your digestive system. Think about the mystery of the body. I mean, it's amazing. We don't even know half of what's going on in our bodies to keep us alive. You know, nobody's thinking, oh, you know, I've eaten my breakfast, all right, gastric juices start breaking down, okay, now you got the red blood cells, get in there, start picking up those nutrients. And come on, does anybody think about the process? You know, if you start thinking about your breathing too, you start to think, inhale. You can get a little freaky, you start thinking about it. You know, we don't think about the vitamins we need or, you know, what happens in the process. All that stuff just happens automatically. There are some who will claim that our bodies, our creations, just a result of, random events coming together. Various cells, somehow or other, we were able to start functioning as a coherent whole. But when you get into the nitty-gritty, I don't know how people can have that rationale, right? I mean, when you look at the human body, you've got to see there's a divine fingerprint on it, right? Steve Loftman, he leads the engineering research group at Discovery Institute, along with being a systems engineer. He's a speaker and an author, a computer scientist. He co-authored a book with Dr. Howard Glicksman. It's called Your Designed Body. I just came across it. I thought it'd be worth a conversation here. You can find it at the Discovery Institute Press. DiscoveryInstitutePress.com is the website. Let's look at the mystery of God's creation. Hey, it's great to have you with me today, Steve. Thank you for your time.
Oh, it's good to be here.
You know, there's a movement that people do all the time, just picking something up in their hand. You pick up the pencil, you click on your keypad, you know, whatever. You use your phone, twirling things around your fingers, you know. It seems pretty simple. But, you know, in terms of the engineering, let's just put this in perspective. What's the bioengineering required just to pick up a pencil in your hand, to you know, twirl it in your fingers, if you will? How complex is that?
Yeah, so you're on the right track here. We don't think about these questions, right? So we take so much of what we're capable of for granted. But, you know, you have to have dozens of muscles to do a simple activity like, say, grabbing a pencil. Or or it's even much harder to use the pencil to do something like writing. So you have to have control systems. You have to have opposing pairs of muscles. You have to have structure underlying the fingers that are doing that work. You have to have a nervous system that transmits signals back and forth. You have to have a mind that thinks about what to write and plans, although the planning is largely subconscious, plans what muscles have to be given signals at what times to make that writing legible. Of course, some of us are better than others, but the number systems required just to do what we think is sort of basic skill. You know, a fifth or sixth grader should have no problem mastering basic writing.
Your book title, Your Designed Body, makes it pretty clear that, you know, you believe the body has been designed. I mean, there are those who think, hey, we're a byproduct of the environment. We crawled out of this primordial soup. And, you know, over time and evolution, we became what we are today. Is there more evidence that counters that argument than is for that argument?
Oh, yeah. So we set out in this book to address a basic question. And this, I think, is perhaps the most important question that an individual human being can address when deciding how to live life. And that is, are we the result of millions of years of blind, purposeless evolution, which would mean we are a cosmic accident? Or are we made by a transcendent God? I mean, there are other really important questions, but that question is how we determine how we live our lives. So if you believe that you are an inconsequential, unimportant, purposeless meat machine made by the forces of evolution, you will live your life in a very different way than if you believe you were intended and that there's purpose in your existence.
Yeah. You know, so clearly I believe, as you do, that there's a divine design in the body. There are some people who claim that the human body still needs to evolve, and we probably still are. But they also want to enhance it. You know, we're in a strange crossroad in humanity right now where, you know, I spoke about Elon Musk a little bit earlier with his Neuralink. And there are people who say, hey, you know, wouldn't it be great if we can enhance the human body with bioengineering technology, with computer and bioengineering technology. What are your thoughts on that?
It's beyond the scope of our book, but it's a really interesting question. So, you know, a lot of people think they can improve the human body either through bioengineering or through implants of various kinds. I think technically it's possible to improve in some ways, but we have to be very, very careful with bioengineering because given how little we understand about how the body works, it would be pretty easy to really mess things up. So, and most of the people who propose this probably looking way out in the future. Putting a new knee in an 80-year-old patient is not really a big deal anymore.
Pacemakers are important. I mean, there's a lot of technology that's really good, you know, that extends life and benefits the quality.
Putting an implant in the brain to increase mental ability, I don't think we're there.
Probably
won't be for a long, long time.
No, I agree. That's one surgery I want to put off. You know, I don't like anybody tinkering with the brain. That's kind of a scary thought. Hey, I was getting ready for the program looking at, what you're writing. You've stated something else, and this is interesting, that there are billions of ways to die, right? But only a few ways to keep ourselves alive. Expand on that if you could. What are the implications of that statement?
Well, so Howard Glucksman, my co-author, is a hospice physician. So he's actually pretty familiar, has been for quite a while. He's pretty familiar with the ways that the human body can fail and how those will lead to or could lead to death. And that what that tells us is that the body is finely tuned and must manage its internal processes with a Goldilocks kind of precision.
Right.
In the absence of that precision, if things get fouled up, things can go haywire very, very fast. The range of possible values for constants or physical parameters like blood pressure or oxygen level or glucose level, there are thousands of things that have to be just right or your body is in deep, deep trouble. Yeah. And that tells us a lot about what kinds of origins would have been possible for this body. It's impossible for you to build systems of this kind gradually, for example.
Yeah, no,
so the standard evolutionary theory can't deal with that. So how do you build a coherent right. system, a system with many parts, all of which are necessary, and all of which have to have the right dynamics, the right capabilities, be made out of the right materials, with the right strengths or shapes or electrical or mechanical properties. You know, if you don't have all the pieces, the system doesn't work and you're dead.
Yeah. So there's no, what's the most basic function of our bodies that we simply can't live without? Respiration? What is it? Or can we reduce it to that? Or is the body too complex for that?
Well, so it's really hard to answer a question like that because, everything is interdependent.
Yep.
So you can't, respiration is the typical way that people die. Either some sort of respiratory or cardiac issue, which always cuts off the ability for your cells to obtain oxygen, which is generally how people die.
Right.
So if you want to solve the respiration problem, you need a cardiovascular system. You need lungs. You need a musculoskeletal system to support those lungs and provide the ability to create a vacuum to pull fresh air into your lungs. You need lots and lots of biochemistry, molecular machines. You need fine-tuned controls on the delivery of blood to various parts of your body.
Yeah.
So the problem just keeps going and going and going.
Yeah.
And taking out any part of it, and it's likely that respiration will either cease altogether or at least be restricted and cause severe debility.
There's a professor at Lehigh University. His name, I think it's Michael Behe. He's also a senior fellow at Discovery. He's made, some interesting arguments. He's been censured for them. Has this theory of intelligent design and maybe some final thoughts on this become a little more accepted? I mean, you make this case that we're so intricately designed. Clearly, there's a divine intelligence behind this. Why isn't that more accepted? Has the theory of intelligent design become a little more accepted in the scientific community? What are you seeing?
Well, that's also a good question. There are a lot more people who are at least open or adhering to some facets of this theory than there used to be, but it's a career jeopardizing move especially for academics. So there are a lot of people who are being very quiet about their views on this subject because they have kids and their kids need shoes. So they want to keep an income. So, and there are so many cases of people who have lost their jobs or their positions over acceptance of this, the intelligent design theory, or even some facet of it. So it's a little dangerous still for academics and other professionals to come out in favor publicly of intelligent design theory.
Yeah.
Which is really sad.
Yeah, I agree with you, Steve. My guest, Steve Loftman, he leads the engineering research group at the Discovery Institute. Came out with a new book called Your Designed Body. You can find it there at discoveryinstitutepress.com. Hey, if people want to get the book, that's the best place, I'm assuming, to get it. Discovery Press, or is it available online, or where can you pick it up?
I think pretty much all major booksellers will have that. So it should be available pretty much wherever you look.
Well, I'm grateful for your time. I wish you the best with the book. I'm glad you're out there bringing these truths to everybody. It's a delight to have you here with me, Steve. So we'll catch up soon. Again, the book is called Your Designed Body. Steve Loftman, again, is the author of it, along with Dr. Howard Glicksman. You need to do a quick search for their name and find the book. I think you'll find it compelling. It's about 13 minutes before the top of the hour. I need to take a short pause. I'll be back on the other side with more. Stay with me. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. Get connected.
The true faith.
The full story.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, thanks for joining me. You can get in. Our number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Just a quick programming note. Tomorrow night, Patrick Madrid, Father Rocky and I are going to get together. We're going to pray the Rosary across America. And I was surprised Father had stopped by the studio on his way out here and said, hey, it's my 1,000th, you know, Rosary across America. I'm thinking, wow, it's been over 3 years already. It's amazing how time flies. Made me want to do the math on the chaplet, right? But 1,000 rosaries. So I am honored to be invited to be part of that broadcast with Father. Patrick and I are going to be hanging out here at the studio and connecting with Father. And we invite you to join us. All right, it's 7 o'clock, the Rosary Across America. I hope you'll go ahead and do that. Also, on the 12th, that's next Monday, I'm going to be traveling with Father Rocky to Indiana. And I'm going to be praying the rosary with him there at the National Shrine of Our Lady of Guadalupe. It's actually the Feast of Our Lady of Guadalupe. So join us again. Those are two nights you can join Father and I for the rosary. A couple quick news stories here before I run out of time. I don't know if you – I was just passing by the airport a couple days ago, and I had seen a sign that says you need to have your real ID. I don't know if you have your real ID yet. My producer or board operator right now, Patrick Alog, just got back. If you still haven't gotten your license upgrade, he was there on a trip. He says, no, you don't need your real ID yet. Because I said, did you have to have that? They keep moving this. COVID kept moving the real ID back. Time was running out on the deadline to have those done by May 3rd of next year. Department of Homeland Security got the message from the states that they're so backlogged on processing licenses because they were delayed during the pandemic. You've got into May 7th of 2025 before you'll need a real ID, driver's license, or identification card before you can travel by air. I often thought about it. I remember this was supposed to take place last year and prior to that. You get to the airport, right? You don't have your real ID. You just have your state license. They're not going to let you on a plane. If you had your passport, you can get it, but no. That was the deal. I'm sure there'll be a heavier push as we get closer. So we'll see what happens. Let me grab a call or two here too, and we can talk. I only got a couple minutes left. Helen is listening in Lombard, Illinois. Helen, good afternoon.
Hey there, Drew. How are you today?
Hey, I'm hanging in there. I'm okay.
Yes, that's exactly why I'm calling. I feel like I'm always just hanging in there. You're a very hopeful person, and I love listening to your show and the guests that you have. But I'm sometimes struggling, and I try to do my three Hail Marys, not a lot, but a real quick in the morning for faith, hope, and charity. And some days I'm kind of like, does it matter anymore?
So what's getting you down,
Helen?
I feel
like everything's kind of falling apart.
Is it in your own life or is it the culture? What's making
it's
you feel
the
this
culture.
Way? Yeah.
It's the culture. And, I'm a teacher, so that kind of life has been hard, seeing how schools are going, and it's just all of it. Like I said to the screener, I know the end of the story.
Yeah,
and I know it's amen, literally.
Yeah. Well,
and I know this is going to be his will. How do we keep praying, Drew? How do we keep our faith? How do we keep our church alive?
Yeah.
Schools are closing, Catholic schools.
Yeah, well, a couple things here. And as a teacher, first of all, thank you for your yes. We need good, well-formed teachers like you. And, you know, my initial thought as you're saying this, and look, I'm like you too. I have to eat and breathe and sleep and consume the news and what's happening in the culture. My struggle with it all, because it can become overwhelming too. Sometimes you just want to turn off the radio or close the laptop or, mm-hmm. you know, not watch this type of stuff. You know, it can be overwhelming. Disconnect from it if you have to for a little bit, Helen. You know, give yourself a break. But also, as you point out, and you know, in the end, we win. We're in a spiritual battle. You have to live in the present moment. You have to live in the now. Don't worry about tomorrow. Tomorrow will take care of itself. You know, we can get concerned about what's happening with the economy or the power grid, or we can get worried about inflation or possible war, new pandemics. I mean, gosh, it can be overwhelming.
Yeah.
You never want to leave your house, right?
Yeah.
You're like, oh my gosh, look at this. Then we talk about what's happening in the culture. And you see this, you know, we talked about these school books and the indoctrination of our kids. I mean, it can be horrible. But I often think of a message that the Lord gave to St. Faustina. He said this to her once, and it's a message really to all of us. He says, my daughter, you know, have fear of nothing because I'm always with you. You know, all those adversities that you encounter right now, they're going to only harm you to the degree in which I permit them to do so. So, you know, we have to remember that God is in complete control. He's the creator of everything. We have to put our trust in him, walk with him in the present moment. We can't change the past, right? And the future has yet to unfold. I say live in the present moment. And when I get overwhelmed by some of these situations, maybe I'm feeling, gosh, I can't pray, or what am I going to do, or you know, whatever the situation might be, I go before the Lord in the Blessed Sacrament. And that's my advice to you, Helen. Just even for a few minutes, just go. You don't even have to talk. Just sunbathe before the Son of God, right? Just sit there and let the Lord talk to you. Let him minister to your heart. Just be in the presence of his divine mercy. And I think you'll feel better. But have hope. I'm with you. You're not alone. You know, you were chosen to live at this particular moment in time, just like I was, right? You and I are called to walk at this moment, to be a light in this darkened world, and to make a difference. And one day we're going to be on the other side of the veil, and we're going to see with perfect vision, you know, our witness, our sacrifice, our love, and the difference we made in the lives of others. So I can't wait to do that with you. And hopefully our paths will cross before then, right? Hopefully we'll get to see each other at some point. So hang in there, okay?
Yes. Thank you, Drew. And then a quick, if I did a chaplet. My Uncle Bob passed away last week, and my Uncle Steve passed away just yesterday.
Wow.
If you just think of them in your prayers and the rest of the family.
I will do that. I'm actually going to go to Mass tonight. My wife and I are going to be heading out, and I will remember them during my Eucharistic intention for their souls, okay? Father Rocky's going to pray the rosary tonight. I'm sure he'll pray for you as well. But Helen, hang in there. I'm sorry for your family's loss. And thanks for the call. You know, you're the voice of a lot of people. You're not alone out there. So I share your pain.
Thank you so much, Drew.
God bless you.
And you're the voice of a lot of hope for people. So thank you.
No, thank you for saying that. I appreciate it. We're family, right? We hang out together every day. We walk together this journey called life. And we're here to support one another spiritually in prayer, certainly. And it's just so honored and so humbled to really play just a small part in the mission of Relevant Radio. I really am. I mean, we don't know the lives that are being impacted or touched, but we're not alone. I'm able to give you a look at life, you know, the most important issues and news of the day, and hopefully shine a moral light on a lot of those. But above all, to give hope, because you know, we have to be people of hope, right? We have got to be people of hope. We win in the end. You and I were created to live forever. You might be suffering immensely right now. There is a better future for you. There's a brighter future for you. And one day when we're free from the bondages of this life, the travails, the hardship of this side of the veil, we will enter a place in which St. Paul says, no eye has seen, no ear has heard. And there's a great beauty that awaits all of us. I'll pray for you tonight at Mass, okay? say a prayer for me, and we'll talk again tomorrow. God bless.